Welcome to the Gym Shorts podcast series. I am your host, Kathy Smith. Today we meet Loretta Ellsworth, well-known historical fiction author and now children's book author, as she shares her process of writing, the joy of reading, and learning to tell your own stories. Loretta, I just wanted to say hello and welcome to the Gym Shorts podcast. We are so excited to have you here today. Our first question when we get started is always, what is your favorite kids book and why? Just because you're an educator and I'm an educator. And I just think the more we can read, the better we all are. So please let us know.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I love the name of your podcast, Gym Shorts.
So, thanks.
And actually, that was a really hard question. When I was younger, I loved all the Trixie Belden series.
Oh, yes.
I you know, when I go into like an antique shop and I find one of these, I buy them all the time. And my sister read Nancy Drew. And I think I read Trixie Belden because she was a little bit younger.
Sure.
But my favorite children's book was one I read actually when I was an adult. It was Tuck Everlasting.
Oh, I love that book too. Oh.
It's a story about a girl who discovers a spring that offers eternal life. And, it's about family and growing up and death. And it's written in a way that young readers will understand or relate to. And it's a book that just stuck with me for so many years. And I think it's so well written. It's a short, tiny book, but it packs so much emotional punch in it. So, yeah.
Love it. Fabulous. There's so many good books, aren't there, Loretta?
Yeah.
So thank you again for joining us today. We're meeting Loretta Ellsworth, author of the new children's book, Tangle Knot. And so thank you so much. We are excited to have this conversation. You've been a teacher and that you're an author and all those things. I would love to know. When did you begin writing? Who influenced you? What goes into your research to write historical fiction?
Well, I grew up in Mason City, Iowa, and I was one of seven children. I was kind of in the middle, so I was a third of seven, and I loved reading as a child. I remember practicing my handwriting, writing my name so that I could get a library card.
Aww, yeah.
And my sister and I would walk. There was a library that wasn't too far from our home, and we would walk there and check out as many books as we could carry. Mm-hmm. You know, and we didn't have any bags. We just hold them in our hearts back then, you know, and carry them home. And then in the summer, we'd sit on a blanket in the backyard and read them. And that was, we just thought we were in heaven, you know. My older sister was a fast reader and she could read all hers. And I never made it through my stack of books, of course, but, it was just, that whole experience was just so wonderful. And I imagined writing my own stories then when I was younger, but I didn't know anybody who was a writer. So I just thought it was this, you know, I had no idea who were these people were. They were these famous people that you know.
Maybe you're famous now.
I don't know, but
yes,
yeah. But it just seems so far away from my experience, and so I never considered that I could actually write a book. And it wasn't until I was older with kids of my own, I went to college and got a degree and became a Spanish teacher, and had four children of my own. And we lived in Des Moines, Iowa, and then my husband. We had a job with Wells Fargo and we moved up here to Minneapolis area, to Lakeville. And that's when I taught up here. I became a teacher and taught up here for many years. But I always thought about writing.
Awesome. All your life.
And for a while I worked part-time at a library, and that also triggered my desire to write. Mm-hmm. So I took some classes at the Loft and I started writing part-time, and eventually my first book was published, and it was called The Shrouding Woman, and this is based on an article that I'd read in the newspaper about shrouding women, who were special women who prepared bodies for burial. And this is before we had undertakers and funeral homes. Ooh. So I wrote the book for myself because I thought, what child is interested
No, but yeah, I
you
mean,
know, this, but you know, it's actually a story of a young girl finding her way and in her going through her own grief and stuff. And you never know where your books will take you. This is the paperback edition of it,
oh, beautiful.
as well. And then this is the Japanese version.
Oh my goodness, Japanese.
And I would get letters from Japan, and I didn't realize shrouded women were a big part of the Japanese culture as well.
The culture. That makes sense.
And I did so much research for this book because even though it's fiction, you want everything to be, I enjoyed reading historical fiction to begin with myself. And because you learn about these little known gems of history, you learn those things that are just so fascinating to me. And I work very hard to make my work books as historically accurate as possible, even though it's fiction. I spent a lot of time at the Minnesota History Center reading old newspapers on microfiche and old prairie journals.
Oh wow, I love that.
Like, yeah.
It's
And
got to be
like, here's
fascinating to the things you've learned.
it is. Here's one from just and most of this doesn't end up in your book, but this is a article, a newspaper from 1879. I set the book in Caledonia, Minnesota. I'm from
That
there.
is so cool. Did you have to print that off of the microfiche then, or where did you get
I
that?
did. I printed
Wow.
it off. But you might get like a few little pieces of de some little details to add to your story, basically from this, and not a lot. And you can be sucked down a rabbit hole pretty easily, but also those little details sometimes, make your story. Like someone will say, yeah, this is, I can believe your
I remember
story
that.
because of this, So I think that's, I think it's very important. And sometimes, and every book requires research. I mean, no matter what you're writing about, but historical fiction does require, I think, a great deal more.
Do you think that it makes the length of how long it takes to write even more because you are doing that in-depth research?
It does. It does. You do. You spend a lot more time in researching everything. The funny part is, it's not like somebody from 1870s is going to come
Yeah,
up with
I'm gonna be around to tell you if that's accurate.
a new
Tell us about Tangle Knot and what was your inspiration for writing that book?
job. Well, for Jangle Knot, it was a story that I wrote during COVID. At first, you've got all this time during COVID, and you think I could get a lot of writing done because you're stuck at home.
Stuck, yeah.
But I, along with a lot of other writers I knew, I had a hard time sometimes writing because of everything that was going on. You're wondering, what's the world going to
Next
be
year.
like? Is everybody going to, are we going back to, is everything going to go back the same? At the same time, I have 11 grandkids. Eight of them are in the San Diego area, and I couldn't see them except on FaceTime,
Oh, that's so
for a
sad.
couple of years. So it was really hard, and I really missed them. And I decided to be kind of playful, and I wrote. I had taken when I went to school. I went back to school and got my MFA, or at Hamline University in writing for children. And I had spent a whole semester on writing picture books, but never did really well with those. During COVID, I did a lot of just playing around with writing. And I have some granddaughters who have kind of thick, tangly hair. And so that inspired this
Oh, it's
kind
so
of an
adorable.
over the top type of book. And it was one that was just really fun to write. And I really enjoyed doing that, and they were
Tell us a
thrilled.
little bit about what the book is about. Tell our listeners what it's about.
Sure. It's about a girl who has really messy hair, and it's very tangly, and her mother wants her to brush it, but she doesn't. And she ends up getting a nest in it with a bird, and which she thinks is wonderful. Her mother's not too thrilled about. And then pretty soon, some eggs appear. And she brings her nest to school for show and tell, and she thinks it's really wonderful. And then the eggs crack, and we have three little birds.
Sweet.
Her mom isn't too happy about it, but she begins to embrace her child for
That's
who
adorable.
she is. She eventually the birds leave the nest,
Oh,
which is
so
kind of
poetic.
sad.
Yeah.
She decides then that it's time for a change. And I'll leave it there. So you have to find the rest of
Yeah. Oh, there you
this
go.
part.
Leave us with a
Right.
cliffhanger. I love that though. I think you're so talented. Did you do all of the graphics and design too, or how did you get all of
No,
this come together?
the wonderful Annabelle Tempest. She's actually my editor. They usually assign an illustrator, but she gave me three different illustrators to choose from,
Right.
and I ended up choosing Annabelle, who lives in England. So
Wow.
I've never met her, but she did a wonderful job with it.
That's fabulous. So who did you go through the publishing side? Did you publish here locally or did you go out to New York?
New York, it's Page Street Kids.
What do you think was your reaction from your grandchildren, other kids, as you've introduced the book to audiences all over the country?
Well, my grandkids were very excited. I dedicated it to my granddaughters. And I have three grandsons too, and I asked if they wanted me to dedicate it to them too, but they said they wanted me to write a boy book and dedicate it to them. So I'm now working on something for them.
Oh, good. That'll be exciting.
I just received a really kind message from a mom who picked up Tanglenaut at the library. And she said she has a daughter with thick, curly hair. And she said she read the book from a different lens now that her daughter's older. Her daughter just turned 18. And she said she's wrestled with the reality that her baby will soon be flying the nest. And
There you go, yeah.
she said that although she realizes the book may have been written for girls to embrace their individuality, she said she thought it was also a book for the moms who raised them, moms who may dread an empty nest but feel immense gratitude to the ability to watch their birdies soar. So I thought, every reader brings their own understanding and
Their
experience to reading.
experience. That's so true. Wow. I mean, I was thinking about it when I looked at the book, and when we were little, we had a friend who had really tangly, thick hair like that. And we would watch her mom brush her hair, and she couldn't stand it because it hurt, you're pulling and pulling, but it had to be done. And we would watch her, and she would just wriggle and squiggle and like that. But she had gorgeous hair, and but it just is such a sweet book because it reminds you of the push and pull between mom and child when they're doing those kinds of things. And there you go with your nest on her head, and it's just a beautiful book. So Loretta, we know that reading and writing are essential tools to almost all kinds of learning, including skills like critical thinking, comprehension, understanding how to communicate with the world, grammar and vocabulary, and development. What do you have to say about that? I mean, tell us a little bit about your teaching experience and how does that connect?
I know that children who embrace reading and writing find it helps them master other subjects as well. As you said, they're essential tools that help us communicate. And I know it sounds mean, but on social media, it's kind of unkind. But often people will point out grammar mistakes if anybody. So I, it's
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, I think it's we have to do it, and I think I like that you're committed to keeping that. I mean, so many things have changed in education policy and things that kids need to learn, but I think, you can never go wrong if you have good grammar, and you can never go wrong if you can write a sentence that starts with a capital and ends with a period and has something to say. So awesome. Tell me more about your Spanish teaching. Did you teach middle school ages or?
I started in high school and then I moved to middle school, which I found to be very rewarding. Although in middle school it seems like there's a lot of drama for girls, especially,
A lot.
but a lot. But they are at that age where they still are excited to learn. I found that it was very rewarding teaching them.
Yeah, I can imagine. When I was teaching, I did some middle school language arts special ed. So I was kind of in the classroom and then outside of the classroom. And you're right, there is a lot of drama. There's a lot of things going on in that middle school life that sometimes we don't even understand. But yeah, but I agree with you. I think that they are also, if you can excite them and energize them, they do really want to learn and they are excited to get into the project. What do you think? Why do you think writing is so important for learning?
Well, most jobs that you have, no matter what you do, it's going to require writing skills in some way or form or another, Two of my sons are attorneys and they do a great deal of writing. I have a daughter-in-law who works at as a geneticist, and she also does a great deal of writing. So,
Really?
as you know, it seems like no matter what job you have, it does entail quite a bit of writing.
Well, they must be talented if they're your children. They probably inherited your writing genes.
Oh, no. Yes.
What if there are young people, especially as we're moving into the summer now and kids are kind of done with their academic learning and expectations over the summertime? How can young people begin writing? Do you have any advice for them or for people
Well,
that are helping them?
I think it's, first I'd encourage them to read as much as they can. If you're really interested in writing, read everything, read widely. Libraries offer summer reading programs, and they often give prizes for reading books. Also, keeping a journal, I think, is really important. I kept a journal when I was younger, and a lot of it's boring, but you still have a look at just a little bit of a look into your mind at a certain age. And it's hard to think that you might forget that when you as you grow, but you do. So it's nice to have, even if you have a great memory, it's nice to have your own words to kind of help you remember what it was like to be like, 6 years old or 7 years
Right.
old.
To relate to that when you're writing. Yeah.
Right.
Very interesting. I like that idea. What did you struggle with as a young writer when you were just getting started, and how did you get past that?
What I really struggled with was I really struggled with finding my voice. I think it's really hard to find your voice when you're first starting out writing, because you don't know what your voice is.
How did you figure it out? What?
Well, I think if we all sat down and wrote Harry Potter, our own ver you know,
Yeah.
it would come out a million different ways. Even
Sure.
if we tried to write the original, I mean, it's just because your own voice is going to end up coming out. So the way to work through that is just to keep writing. The more you write, the more you discover your voice. Even if we were all trying to write the same books, it'd all come out differently.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about it. When I first, even if you're not aware of your voice, I remember my first book, I didn't want it to come off sounding like someone else, you know. But I read a lot of historical fiction, and you eventually learn that if you do sound like someone else, it's a compliment. My first book was compared to Sarah Plain and Tall, which I had read, but I didn't really feel like I was influenced by it. But it was, I thought, what a wonderful compliment. Because we both kind of write spear. And I think that I, you know, our styles are a bit similar, but so I often have to go back and expand on scenes because I write too spearily. But so I wouldn't worry about it because, like I said, no one is the same of you regardless of what you're writing. I mean, we have our own personalities. And you're unique. Everyone is unique. And we all have our own voice. But it does take a while to discover that. And I think that was my biggest struggle.
As a writer, how hard has it been to switch genres? Because it looks like for a while, all of your other books were historical fiction for adults and very well done, by the way. And then now you're writing for kids. Is it hard to go back and forth?
It is a little bit. I just think that if you're going, no matter what genre you write in, if you wanted to write sci-fi, whatever, the hardest thing is developing readership. if you go back and forth, people, you know, it's not like John Grisham, you expect a legal thriller, you know?
Right.
So these people have their own niche, you know, corners, you know, and when you get away from that, you know, it is hard for people, you know, to go from one genre to the other to follow you. But at the same time, if you're writing, you're following your own passion for writing, I think, you know, I think that's fine. If you don't care about that. The only thing is you have to read widely in your genre.
Okay.
You have to be familiar with what's out there. You have to understand, you know, you just have to read a lot. If you don't, you know, if you don't read picture books, you know, it's really hard to write a picture book.
Do you think that I ended up writing a kid's book too? And do you think that when you're reading all, and I agree with you that you need to read so many kids' books. When I was getting my master's at the U, I had this wonderful teaching reading to kids class, and we read new kids' books every time we met, and just phenomenal. And it's just opens your mind. So I agree with you that you need to do that. Do you think it's because that helps you separate yourself from all the other authors of those books, or to align yourself with that genre? Or why would you recommend that? I think it's good, but why do you recommend it?
First of all, you see, there is a form for picture books, you know, they're 32 pages. You see, when you, each page has to draw you to the next page. You have to look at what can be illustrated. You don't want a book set in all one setting where nothing changes. So you see other books and see how they do this and how they accomplish it. And how they're successful at it. And I think it helps you think along those terms, you know. It's just a good craft, you know, learning about your craft. How do they do it? How can I do it? And you get, you know, you see some a book, and it sometimes it sparks ideas of your own too, reading other books. So
do you think, so you said that your illustrator is in England. When you are writing a kid's book, or, you know, clearly there's not a lot of pictures in your adult historical fiction, but when you're writing those, are you kind of putting the images in your mind with that goes along with the words, and then you send those ideas to the illustrator? How do you do that?
No, the illustrator pretty much uses your words and comes up with ideas. You know, and it is very much collaboration. Like I mentioned Trixie the cat in the book, but the illustrator decided to use the cat like in almost every scene, which was cute, you know.
So cute. Yeah, that's adorable and very
Yeah.
Art.
So they add their own, you know, and then they do send them, to, you know, they send, we send back and forth pictures. The only thing, the previous version of this, when she first sent it to me, because she lives in England, it was a double decker blue bus.
Oh, that
And they
doesn't
said,
work in the United States, yeah.
right. And I said, can you make it more look like more of a school bus in the, you know, in the United States? So perhaps a yellow one.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you don't even think about the cultural differences across countries, you know,
Right.
like what they have versus what we have. So interesting. So, Loretta, do you have tips for young people who might be nervous to share their writing publicly? I mean, I think it kind of goes along with what you were saying about finding your voice, but also then putting that out there.
Right. It is very scary. When I first started, I joined a writer's group and we had to read a chapter out loud. I would just be sweating bullets, just and my voice would tremble, and I was just so afraid to share my chapter. Because it is such a personal thing. So it is very hard. I relate to that. I think the But the only thing that helps is doing it more and more. The more you share, the more confident you become, because, you know, people are going to, you know,
Criticize.
respond to your writing and, you know, tell you wonderful things about it. So, you know, but it is very scary to share. It's just taken me a long time to get over those
Comfortable.
fears.
Do you think that when you're sharing with other writers that you are getting more creative ideas, or have you ever said, "Oh, I think I should change that based on what someone's,
Yes.
you know, someone
Often,
talking?"
yeah, lots of times I get wonderful suggestions that, oh, I hadn't thought of that before. Even my editor for Tangle Knot, when I first wrote this, I had read Imogene's Antlers, which is kind of an over the top, and I kind of imagined that this as being kind of an over the top story, but it ended up that the editor encouraged me to consider adding a few more layers, emotional layers between the mother and daughter. So it
Oh,
became kind
awesome.
of a mother-daughter book too.
Yeah.
You know, it was so much for the better that I just something I hadn't even thought of, you know.
Well, and such a good idea. I think as moms, we all can remember having to do our kids' hair. And how many
Yes.
daughters did you have? You had how many girls?
I had one daughter,
One daughter.
three boys.
Yeah. And if you remember that first, second, third grade time, you know that there was a few tears and a few struggles with each other.
Right,
So,
exactly, right.
yeah, it's just
So,
a lovely way for moms to remember and think about that time in their lives too. So I really think it's an amazing kids book. Let's see. What can young writers and their caregivers do during the summer to build on writing and reading enjoyment?
reading, if they're interested in reading books on craft, there are a lot of books on craft now that are written for younger readers. I just read a book called You, the Story by Ruta Sepetys. And it talks about incorporating your own memories and experiences into story. And even for young writers, it's a, you know, it's a wonderful way to learn about writing and story, and structure. So.
So I noticed I was looking on your website and it said that you lead workshops for grades 3 through 12. How can families, moms, dads, kids get involved? And are you doing that this summer?
I usually do through some of the young writer workshops across the state. There's one that just happened at Bethel University, and you know, I think a lot of the important for young kids who are when you're encouraging creative writing, I wouldn't worry too much about grammar, you know. That'll come later. We just want to encourage creativity, and encourage their imaginations and storytelling, and let it be fun activities. is something they enjoy. When I've taught at some writer, young writers, there's so many different classes, and they're all so fun, writing activities and games. One I did last year was called Story Chains, which a lot of them do at school too, but it's where you give them a prompt and they write a paragraph and then pass it to another student who continues the story. And so you go through like three or four students, and they not only learn about structure, but they see writing as a creative task, where there's no right answer because, the
I
story
love
might
that.
some ways be different than they even expected. And this is, encourages them to be willing to take risks too, and do more with their stories and look at them differently. So it's really fun.
I love that. I think, like you said, it gives them a little more confidence because there isn't a right or wrong way. And then passing to somebody else, they can say, oh, I would have never thought of that. And there's no letter grade. I think that sometimes kids can get so focused on, oh, I have to get an A, or I need to get a 4.0, or I need to blah, blah, blah. And what is my teacher looking for? When in fact, your teacher's just looking for your creativity, whatever that is. And I think you give them that liberty to express who they are and also feel accepted and acknowledged, and that's perfect. They don't need
It is,
anything
and
more.
they get it back at the end, and they have this story, and it's written partly by them, and but it's a collaborative effort, and so they take it home, and they've got someone else's words there too, and I just think that's really special for them too.
And also helps teach them, like you said, collaboration, working with a team, taking criticism or listening to other peers, contributing and or saying we let's change that or what have you. So it keeps them flexible and open to the rest of their lives. If it's in high school or at college or working at a job, all of a sudden they're learning to not take so much personally, but more of a reflective approach. So that's awesome.
And in past we've done, years ago we used to like create our own our own jelly, our own Bertie Bott's flavored bean from Harry Potter when that was so big, at
All
the time.
right. Oh,
And
fun.
have use all the different senses and describing it, and so there are a lot of ways to just make creativity fun and writing fun and using their imagination. So
Well, I love that you do those workshops all over the place. It just feels like you would probably have been a good language arts teacher beside the Spanish teacher because you are very creative and you're helping
I've
with.
forgotten a lot of my Spanish now that I haven't been teaching for a while. So, but the kids, it's amazing. They're so creative. I'm always just so impressed with their writing too, the writing abilities of these students. I just, it's so impressive, and I would say we never have to worry about the future of books because there are all these young voices that are coming up that are just fantastic.
On that note, what are your thoughts about AI and writing and how one of my sisters is a middle school language arts teacher, and I asked her the same question and I said, what are you concerned with AI? What do you like about AI? How do you think that will impact the future?
I like AI to be used to do things that we don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would love AI to be to do my taxes and to
Yeah,
do
make
my
dinner.
dinner so that I can be creative. I don't want AI to take over my job as a writer or creativity.
Right.
But so I think, using it appropriately, it can be very helpful, but letting it take over the things that we want to do
Yeah.
would not be.
Right. Well, I was talking to someone in the publishing industry, and he's just, well, it's so easy. You can start a sentence and then I'll write you a paragraph, and Now you're done and writing a story in 3 minutes. And I'm like, but where's the human component? Where's the emotional piece? Where's that getting into something? And I don't think that AI is meant for story writing at all.
I
That's
don't
my
think so either.
opinion.
I think it could write a story, obviously, it could write a decent story, but it doesn't write the story. Every story has, like you said, a human element. It comes from inside of you. And that's the first thing whenever you write a book, they say, what inspired you? Where did this book come from? How does this book relate to you? So you can't do that with AI. It
So
has no human component.
I love what you're saying, that it's about you and it comes from you. Moving back to the fiction that you were writing before your kids' books, do you feel like there are any books that you've written that you can relate to personally as an author?
Well, I think I relate to all of them personally. That's an author.
Parts of
They
you.
all come from some part of me.
Of you.
They all have to do have something to do with you. And I think every author, for every book, the book comes from them. It speaks to them in a way that's very personal, and it comes from somewhere inside themselves that they, I think probably Stars Over Clear Lake is probably because
Love that book.
it's set in near my hometown, and at the surf ballroom, and my parents met at the surf ballroom, and so it's got a lot of
Connection.
connection to me. Yeah,
Oh, that's
and I
lovely.
named a lot of the characters after people, my te former teachers, and just people that I knew. So yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Have you ever gotten people calling you up and saying, hey, is that me in your book? Or
Yeah, well, they're fictional, but yeah, they, yes. Yeah,
Interesting.
actually, my one of the characters in here, the teacher, I named after my former teacher who was 99 when the book came out. And the surf ballroom held a publication party for me. And she drove, had her son drive her up from Kansas City
Oh my
to be
goodness,
at the
how special.
publication party. And at that time, she was 100 years old when the book came out finally.
Oh my goodness, how
She was very
lovely.
still sharp, and
She was so proud of you, I'm
yeah,
sure.
she was very proud. So it was, I was like, there's nothing better than to have your teacher there.
Oh man, I love that, Loretta. Well, I think this has just been so wonderful to get to know you and learn more about you as an author, and your talent is so deep. It's
Oh, well, thank you.
amazing to see not only, the fiction that you've been writing for adults, and then now moving into this genre and being so successful as well. So very talented that, and we are so lucky to have you as a guest today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. This is wonderful.
Yeah, no,
Enjoy.
we are excited to follow your career and see what comes next.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Have a great rest of your day, Loretta.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.